Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Show tapes live some Thursdays on our YouTube channel, ANN Zach. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more.
Hope you enjoy the show.
Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. Jacob is here.
Hey, folks.
And we're also joined by Anime News Network, also the narrative voice in Bananya from Discotech. It's incredible.
Hey, I'm an ideal fit for this kind of subject material.
We have to introduce
the voice of children's cartoons.
Yes,
is here to talk about demons.
So we are here to discuss the recently released Netflix series by Masaki Yuasa, based on the classic Go to Guy manga / trashy old OVA series / like a bunch of different spinoffs. Devilman Crybaby on Netflix. So I watched this like in a day in one shot, and I'm pretty sure everybody else here did as well. Yeah. And I'm still kind of processing it, and I'm still kind of getting over it, if that sort of makes sense, like processing what I saw.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, It was enough of a bone to chew on that, like, I'm just thinking to myself, wait a minute, this, as we record this, it came out like 6 days ago, right?
Yeah.
I feel like I've been thinking about it for weeks.
Yeah. My experience was I watched the first episode for the preview guide, and I wrote it up, and I was like, thank God, a Masaki Yuasa thing that I don't have to think about. And then 3 days later, I was like, well, I should watch more of this. I'll just watch one more episode. And I did the shotgunned 2 through 10 in one night. And I was like, oh, my preview was wrong.
Yeah.
Wait, so what did your preview guide entry say? Basically, like, I didn't get a chance to read it. What did it say?
Well, my early take on it was like, I started by saying, so I'm the weirdo who doesn't really like Masaki Yuasa stuff very much. I don't dislike it. It's just I've never really loved his work because I don't connect to it emotionally. And that was my argument. I said, thankfully, it looks like I won't have to think very hard about this one. You know, it's just a rocking good time and it's super rad and crazy. And I loved it. But I was like, well, I don't have to think very hard about this one.
Yeah. But then
about 3 or 4 episodes later, I did.
So I kind of want to start this discussion with what was your familiarity with Go to Guy? What was your familiarity with Devilman? How much of it had you read and or seen? How familiar with it were you? Jacob, why don't we start with you on that?
So for Go to Guy, like, I'm familiar with most of the stuff that I've seen from his manga and from the anime adapted from it is the most, like, memeable moments. Like, I've never sat through, like, the whole series of Cutie Honey or anything like that, but I have a very vivid understanding of his aesthetic and the things that people remember about it and how influential it was. Because I did a lot of, like, whenever, like, Daryl would write about it or something like that, I would read it. So I'm familiar with that, but I never, like, really indulged his work. I haven't read through any of his full manga or anything like that. I've seen the first OVA of Devilman. I think there's, like, 3 or 4, right? There's a number of them. I saw the first one, and I saw it in English, and I remember laughing at the dub and different, like, you know, some of the moments that you see passed around a lot from the OVA. But that was my entire experience with Devilman. I haven't read the manga or anything. I just saw one of the OVAs, and I know the theme song to the old 70s television show, but that's about it.
Mike, you have extensive experience.
I mean, I've been a fan of Go to Guy's work since I became an active anime fan in the 1990s. I think I could say that I first saw Devilman the character, or Akira Fudo the character, in the new Cutie Honey OVAs, which came out in the 90s. He had kind of a cute little cameo role there.
Oh yeah.
But I pretty quickly discovered the 1980s OVAs, which are a terrific piece of work, even though they're kind of incomplete. To me that they've become such a mimetic force. I've seen them a lot on Twitter this week reactions to the TV series.
Twitter is like mostly Devilman.
I've seen those. I've read the Devilman manga that was released in English by Dynamic back in the 80s. I actually only last year found a copy of that. I did not know that it had ever come out. that kind of astounded me when I eventually discovered it.
Wow.
But yeah, I read that. You know, the label I do some work for, Discotheque, of course, released the TV series. I haven't been able to get through the whole thing. It's one of those. I've gotten to about episode 8 or 9 a couple of times.
Yeah.
It is. It's a very interesting watch, but it's certainly not really that much like Yuasa's version. It's directed by Tomoharu Katsumata, who is like he's like a Toei lifer who does things very much by the book.
Mm-hmm.
He has a flair for melodrama and action, but very very straightforward, head on kind of stuff. And the Devil Man in that cartoon is sort of a superhero, so a very different kind of Devil Man.
Yeah, well,
and,
I mean,
and of course.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, well, and also, of course, the most important Devil Man, the one from Chibi Gonagai World.
Right.
The tiny, squashed, super deformed one.
Well, there's Devil Man cameos in countless things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Jacob was talking about knowing the song. The song is the song in Japanese fandom has a reach that far exceeds you know, the people who have actually seen and grown up with the show. Everyone knows that damn song.
Yeah, it's very catchy.
The same goes for the ending, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, you can find like pastiches of the opening and ending animations in a variety of different things.
There's a really cool remix for it made for Crybaby that I was like looping a lot when I was working on.
Oh yeah, yeah, everyone's listening to that this week.
It's pretty good.
But
this is a character with a long shadow, and I think it's cool that they brought him back in this way.
Yeah, totally. It's kind of a, I don't want to say like a classic Japanese superhero, but I feel like that's kind of the context it exists in for me. Like, I associate it with 70s superhero comics for the most part. Like, it's an incredibly strange one,
right?
But
don't give this to your 6-year-old one.
Yeah. But yeah.
I mean, and a lot of that, you can just attribute to the fact that the TV Devil Man looks like, you know, a wrestler.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think so.
Looks, or like a costume superhero more so than a primal demonic force of nature.
Yeah, and I've seen the first couple of OVAs. I think I saw them in the 90s. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. I looked at one of them again, you know, after watching Devil Man Crybaby, and was like, boy, this is a... very different from the thing that I just watched. But I think now I'm probably going to wind up going back. Like, I know Seven Seas is re-releasing a bunch of the manga in a couple of months.
Yeah. Yep.
And I'm probably going to pick that up and read that. I've seen a lot
very
of...
much looking forward to the manga.
Yeah, totally. I'm really looking forward to that. I hope it means they release a bunch of other Gonagai stuff. But, like... from the Gonagai buffet of works, because he's pretty prolific, I've seen at least a couple episodes of most of the anime stuff that he's done. You know, and even the shitty OVAs like Bite Me Chameleon, and the Abashiri family was one of his, right? Wasn't it?
I was going to bring that up this episode too.
Yes.
It's relevant.
Okay, all right. Well, maybe we'll hear about it later. But I've seen that a long time ago. But I mean, I've sampled all of that stuff. But I wouldn't say that I ever like really took to him. I never really had access to the manga, so I didn't really have that inroad. And so I feel like now that I have access to it, I can go back and appreciate that stuff a little more. But I didn't really take to it, you know, back in the day. And you know, this feels like such a different thing. Well, we'll get into that, but that's kind of my experience going into this. Also, as far as Yuasa is concerned, I admire him as an artist more than I am personally like a big fan of his aesthetic. Like, I am not that big a fan of his aesthetic, and that's just a personal thing. Well, he's an incredibly accomplished artist. I really like his style. I feel like I understand him and like his style very. I feel like I understand it pretty well. I've seen everything he's done. You know, in terms of personal aesthetic, it's not really my bag. I think this is the best thing he's ever made. Like, from my personal perspective, like, it's certainly the thing that he made that I like the most. Is, you know, that, but that, you know, I just want to make sure that contextualize that for people. Like, I'm not the biggest like cheerleader of his aesthetic personally. Like, it's not necessarily my taste, but this is the kind of director where I might not love everything he does, but I'll be there opening day for everything he does because he's fascinating.
And I have a very similar sort of perspective where I like want to like Yuasa, but never quite get there. And my issue is actually has nothing to do with his style. I love the way that his stuff looks and the way that it's animated and often the way he storyboards scenes. It's interesting to me. I never have like difficulty watching it. It's just that I never connect to it emotionally. And my issue is like, I haven't seen all of his stuff. I haven't seen Kimono Mozume, which is not like licensed or anything, but I am curious about it given that's probably the closest thing to Devilman Crybaby. But
yeah, visually they have a lot in common, I feel.
Yeah. But I'd seen Kaiba and I just didn't get it. And I mean, like, I understood it, but it didn't speak to me emotionally. And Ping Pong the Animation, like, I understood it kind of after I asked, like, people who really liked it, like, what is this about? Because I just kind of couldn't quite... I couldn't quite get it. Like, the problem is that the way that he creates and develops characters, even when it's adapting something, as it was with this as well, the way he develops characters just doesn't... It doesn't speak to me emotionally. So even if I get what he's doing intellectually, and even if it's visually entertaining, like, I just don't love his work because I don't... It doesn't really get me in the feelings. And so this... But this did. So this is the first of his that I really, like, loved a lot. So I'm happy to say, like, oh, I really dig this Yuasa work because I feel like I've always been kind of waiting around to really like him. And, like, he made something that really, really spoke to me, so.
Where do you stand on Yuasa?
Oh, I've liked him, not loved him, but liked him since I saw Mind Game back a year or so after it was released. I value people who do work like he does, who are kind of out on the edge aesthetically, trying to make something new inside an established commercial medium.
Yeah.
But I became a fan of his, an ardent fan of his with Ping Pong. That's the show that really spoke to me. I thought that was a superb, like just a superb transcendent adaptation of a pretty damn good, off-kilter sports manga.
Yeah, I didn't.
When Devilman Crybaby was announced, that went on the list immediately. It was like, yeah, I can't wait to see what he does with this.
Yeah, right. Well, also two great tastes that probably taste great together, like Gonagai and Yuasa. Like, not the most natural, not the first pairing that comes to mind, maybe, but immediately intriguing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's interesting just because you think of Ping Pong and you think of Yuasa and Taiyo Matsumoto and you think, yeah, their styles kind of complement each other.
Yeah,
but you wouldn't expect Yuasa to do a Gonagai story.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't. Now I would.
I kind of wonder just how far down the well we're going to go into Gonagai world just because... I feel like I've seen a lot of his stuff translated to animation. I haven't read a ton of his comics because, like we talked about, not much of it is available in English.
Yeah.
But I feel like Devilman is something where he had an awful lot to say above and beyond just making action manga and supernatural monster stories. And I don't know if Kekko Kamen is as socially conscious.
No,
Devilman was.
And I think you're not going to find, like, if you found an artist of Misaki Yuasa's caliber to take on Cutie Honey, sure. Like, mm-hmm. sure. Like, if you said, like, oh, we're going to do Cutie Honey with, I don't know, some extraordinarily talented director is going to come along and do it.
Rie Matsumoto.
Sure.
Let's say.
Great. That's a great example. I was trying to think of one, and I was like, okay, Rie Matsumoto is a really good choice. Like, that, I would watch that immediately. They said, all right, Cutie Honey by Rie Matsumoto. Sure. Perfect. But that's kind of what it would take, because, like, anything other than that, we're like, hey, we're rebooting Cutie Honey. It's like, unless you have some fucking powerful idea for this, it's just going to be Cutie Honey, which we've seen. You and I have seen animated many, many times at this point. Yeah. It's been done pretty much every way to do it, except bold new vision with new themes to consider, right? So it has to be thematically bold and interesting and new as well, like Devilman Crybaby was, or it's just going to be another one, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it feels. Anyway, so let's talk about this show, because it was not at all what I was expecting. I don't know what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting the end of Evangelion, which is what I got, basically.
I mean, I would say it was precisely what I was expecting for about the first two episodes.
Yes. Okay, so that's correct. So let's talk about those two episodes. Right. Jacob, can you run us through the first, like, the basic plot at the beginning of the show?
Okay, so at the beginning of the show, we have two best friends named Ryo and Akira. And Akira is a crybaby. He is a very sensitive, soft boy. He's a soft child. And he's, but he formed a longstanding, like, friendship with Ryo, who is more... tough, sort of scary tough, I want to say. Like, he's
very cold and logical.
Cold, logical, freakish, you know, sort of like, you know, little sociopathic sort of fella. And they get separated in high school when, lost my train of thought. Right. They get separated in high school when Ryo goes to South America to study. And once he's down there, he discovers, like, the existence of primordial demons, of devils, that they're real, and, like, they live to be, like, summoned so they can take over the Earth once again, or something like that. And that really turns Ryo's crank, so he decides he needs to find a willing sacrifice in order to bring back these devils that he can, like... Because devils, usually what they do is, like, they take over people, or they eat them, one or the other. And usually when you're taken over, like, that's the end of you. But if you have, like, a strong will or a kind heart, or, like, you can kind of survive the process, then you can retain yourself. And he's positive that Akira is the perfect test subject. So he heads back to Japan to yank Akira out of high school and away from the track team to join him in this blood orgy to summon these demons. And Akira, being sort of a soft, sensitive, like, go-with-anything soul, says, yeah, sure, I'll do that. Like, he's just not really... He just trusts Ryo wholeheartedly for some reason.
Yeah, he'll do anything for his friend.
Yeah, which is kind of, you know, you read the room, dude. But, like, so he drags into this orgy, and it works, and Akira is taken over by the spirit of Amon, who is this legendary demon, and becomes Devil Man. And so and he believes that now his responsibility is to fight off other devils and keep humanity safe, now that he's inherited this power. And Ryo is down with that, so long as he can, like, be with him and observe his progress and... You know, that's the premise of our story initially, and then everything goes tits up, but that happens later.
Yeah. So I mean, but there's not really too much to discuss there in the beginning, so we should probably keep going. Right. Jacob.
So I mean, like, after that is a bunch of episodic stories where we meet the rest of the extended cast, which is Miki, who is the girl that Akira is crushing on.
Right, okay, yes.
And do we want to talk about her?
Yes, so, yeah, let's get into the main cast here.
Okay, so Miki is a track star. She's, the strongest, fastest girl on the team. And she's just very, like, a very kind soul, very open-hearted. She I think Akira's parents went away on business... And, like, left him alone. They had to travel a lot for some reason. I don't remember if they're out of the country or if they're just traveling a lot due to some important business.
It's glossed over a bit.
Yeah, so
they're kind of out of the country.
Yeah, and so he's relied on Miki for, like, family support. Like, her family is taking care of Akira. And even after his ghastly transformation, because being possessed by a devil, it's not just like, oh, he's Akira sometimes, and then sometimes he turns into the Devil Man. No, his whole body has been horribly, like... revamped into this big, like, super machismo, heavy eyeliner, dick as big as your forearm guy. And, you know, and I'm not just guessing. They show you it. you know, it's that kind of show.
The show really smacks you over the head with the whole, wow, puberty.
That's
kind of one of the many anxieties that the story is speaking to there.
Yeah, we'll get into the metaphors later for sure. There's some obvious ones. The most obvious one up front is like, all right, so becoming a devil man, a bit of a, you know, okay, that's sexual awakening. I get it. But you know, he's kind of become a frightening guy, but his personality is basically the same. It's just that he's still a crybaby and he still cares about the same stuff. He's just got this tough machismo veneer to him and an insatiable sex drive and bloodlust sometimes, but it doesn't really affect how he acts around people day to day. So he's mostly able to just get on fine, and everybody's like, well, this is kind of weird, but fine, I guess. You know, the puberty sure hit you like a truck, and they just don't bring it up again. But, like, so that's how he spends his days, is, like, trying to protect Miki from other devils and, you know, trying to keep his identity under wraps. And then from there we meet, like, other side characters, but it's kind of hard to talk about them without talking about, like, the big stuff that happens. So at the very beginning, it's kind of a simple dynamic of him trying to be the good guy while Ryo doesn't really care whether he's the good guy or not. He just kind of wants to see more devils burst forth and ravage the earth. So
yeah, and that's kind of how it goes for about the first half of the show or so. And I feel like there's a real turning point about halfway through. I think it's like around episode 6. But it's kind of this way up until we're introduced to Selene, right? Which is the which I feel is the most episodic installment of this show. Feels a little out of place, I thought.
It's like the most that something is built up that doesn't pay off a great deal. It pays off importantly.
I think it's,
But you, do you think Endgame villainous?
It's always been that way with Selene, though. Selene is always held up as this you know, iconic character. Right there with Devilman, you know, is she his greatest adversary? Is she his jilted lover?
And then,
but you know, in the original comics and the OVA, she just has a couple of big scenes and then she's done.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a bait and switch in terms of you think this is going to be the big deal, and it turns out she's not the big deal. She plays a very important role, a very important turning point in the story, but it's not what you think it is.
Which interestingly kind of tracks with the Ava metaphor, because Ava's very much the same way in that it leads into an emotional apocalypse. For the first half or so, you're pretty sure you're just getting a standard robot show with some edge to it and a few interesting new ideas. But then you get to the real shit, and Devilman's very much the same way. And I feel like the Selene stuff is the end of the old shit and into the new shit, what the show is actually about, the emotional arc of the story. And that feels like a hard, that felt like a hard demarcation for me. Did you get that, Jacob?
It was, I mean, I would say it's a little softer. I would say it starts going, wait, when we find out what happened to, or what is going to happen to Akira's parents. It started turning into a different show for me. I'm like, this isn't really monster superhero at all.
Well, they get rid of the parents early, which is really important for a show like this, because they're like, okay, we're not dealing with that.
We're not
dealing with that, and we're not dealing with just Demon Lady. That's not it. And you're like, okay, so what is it then?
Right, but those are pivotal steps in part of the big emotional thematic metaphor that it's building to. It's the first, like, it's not just getting the parents out of the way because it doesn't want to talk about them necessarily, as it is like, well, here's part of the process of this puberty metaphor, which is the death of innocence, which kills off your idealized view of your father figure,
right?
And it's, you know, which in this case means that a devil takes over Akira's dad, and he can't handle it, and he starts killing people, and Akira has to kill his father while looking at his disappointed mother's face, and it's like
episode 4.
This is a metaphor. Yeah, you know. it's extremely straight puberty metaphor, which is interesting, because it's entertaining. I haven't seen really this sort of thing espoused this specific way before. But it's important because Akira, for him, Track was all about this idea of chasing after his parents, who were, you know, it's like he had to keep running in order to not think about this void in his life, this void of family in his life. And he's like, if I keep running, someday I'll catch them. And once they're gone, well, who is he going to run for? Who is he going to run to? And that's what he has to figure out.
So, Mike, in this first half of the show, how much are you sitting there thinking, ticking off plot points and elements from the original, and thinking about it as an adaptation? And did you just at some point find that you had to just give yourself over to this as a new thing?
Well, I mean, throughout, it's new and it's old.
Right.
I don't think it strays all that far from the major story beats of the original,
right?
Which is very, very impressive. It speaks well. It speaks well for both the adaptation and for the guy's original comics. For me, the big turning point wasn't Selene. You know, the big change that was very interesting wasn't how they treated Selene or any of the other, like, the secondary characters that pop up midway through. It was specifically when Miki gets hassled by the punks down by the shore, because in the original story they were very, like, you know, gangster boncho looking dudes, like very, very stereotypical conventional adversary characters. And they have a similar storytelling arc in the comics where they turn into, like, these, good soldier, good guys. But in the animation, they're like these, you know, weird, free-spirited freestyle rappers that, you know, have been forced out onto the margins of society. They have a lot more going on.
Yeah.
Than in the original story. And I thought that was very interesting. Also, they frequently took breaks to rap about their lives and their problems, and I thought those moments were awesome.
It was really good. It was really good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and real breath of fresh air to the whole thing.
Yeah, and they're acting as like a cool like Greek chorus to what you're seeing, and it's like, oh, this is really handy for me. It's giving me a better, just in case the show is either too subtle or too fast moving. I don't think it's a subtle show, but it is a little surreal and fast moving, and it helps ground you in like they're like the Shadow Girls from Utan or any other kind of Greek chorus like element where it's like, here's what you're supposed to be thinking about what you're seeing, just in case it's too nebulous for you.
Well, like,
and it's in a cool rap way.
And you talk about that too nebulous thing. The show, I think, is fairly while you're watching it, there is a sense of incoherency. That's true, I feel, for most of Uwase's stuff. That's just the kind of story that he likes to tell. It's messy. It's kind of outside the lines a bit, kind of like the art that he's making. Mm-hmm. The narrative, I feel, follows that. And so while I might have quibbles with exactly the way some of these storylines play out and everything, I recognize that is his storytelling style. And so I don't really knock it for that. But there is an element of incoherency to it. I feel like you do have to stop and really think about the order of events and what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the turning point for you was, I'm not watching the old thing anymore. This is something very different.
This is setting itself apart. It's staking out new territory.
Well, that's pretty early on in the show. That's very early on in the show.
That's episode two, I think.
But I feel like from
maybe,
a story
perspective, in the end of episode one.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But I feel like from a story perspective, episode six on is like, okay, this is the apocalypse part. Like, this is the end of the world starting from here to the end.
Right. Well, when the parents die, I think in episode four, it's like, okay, I think this is maybe not just a superhero show. I think this is some sort of big emotional metaphor. And then episode six, I think, is where the track stuff happens. That's when it's like, oh, this is not going to end well. This is going to be sad and bad.
Yeah. Well, Jacob said something helpful to me. And Mike, I was curious if this was something you found as well, that after like about episode five and maybe even a little bit before that, it helps to think of the show in terms of emotional logic and not in terms of strictly plot point by plot point. Like it makes sense as an abstracted emotional metaphor more than it makes sense as a traditional, just straightforward story.
Yeah. 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 And you can't just rely on the script and the dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, for me, one scene in particular, when Miki's rival Miko and also the other track runner there, Koda, kind of reveal themselves to each other in a dramatic way. That's like, if you're just listening to the dialogue, you're not going to get it.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And there are scenes, and the way scenes are connected and the way things are illustrated, they're there so that you understand the character's emotional arc, not because it necessarily moves the plot forward or anything like that. Like, I felt like there were moments like that, and that stuff overwhelmed the story, which is great. That's exactly what I want. That's what happens in Evangelion. And Jacob and I were talking about this, about it seems like it's almost its own genre now, is the anime apocalypse that's about everything, but it's all like the highest quality stuff, like Madoka, Eva.
Japanese fiction has always been really good at depicting the end of the world in entertaining ways.
Yeah, but also turning it into a wildly complicated but also extremely relatable emotional metaphor. And they've done, like, I can think of like four or five of them right off the top of my head that are all that are all masterpieces, and this is one of them. Like, this goes in the box with Wolf's Rain and Madoka and Evangelion and all those other shows.
Sega Pain.
Isn't Sega Pain? Sure.
That's a personal one.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of where that stuff starts. So now that we've kind of hit the middle of the show, Jacob, do you want to do what you can to kind of walk us through the next bit?
Yeah. Well, okay. So it's a little tricky. So after his parents die, I don't know, my brain blanked out. Devilman, Akira has a bit of a crisis of conscience, and he starts to sort of lose himself to, that was kind of what was keeping him human. It was keeping him running, right? And he kind of has this crisis of conscience, and he starts to fall into the devil side of things, which means fantasizing about railing the girl you like so hard that you plaster the ceiling with, I think, like 2 gallons of cum. This is a not safe for work podcast, guys, but that's what he does.
That was a very like Gonagai comedy moment right there.
Yeah, he's going to need to get a mop with a long handle.
Bonus, probably the best Evangelion reference I've ever seen in anything.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, unfamiliar ceiling indeed. Anyway, jeez. I hope you don't look up and that's what you see. But so where was I? More importantly, he's looking for release. Obviously, he's trying to escape these feelings. He doesn't want to think for the first time. He doesn't want to cry. He doesn't want to think about these feelings. So that's when he finally falls into Celine's trap. And Celine has been, or Selena, or however you want to say it, yeah, has been sort of like wandering around in the background. And her goal is to get to, I think she's a devil man. Is she a devil or a devil man?
She's a devil.
She's just a straight up devil.
She's absolutely
okay. That's an important distinction.
Devil.
Yeah, she's like Amon, right?
Yeah, she's that's yeah, an important distinction yeah, for later.
Yeah, she, yeah. And she and the thing is she is stalking Akira because she wants to confront Amon.
Yeah.
Right. So she's not she didn't take over a human body. She just looks human because she's just one of those. But most devils don't look human. Yep. Most devils don't, but she does. But she's just a normal primordial devil from like prehistoric times who's like, where's Amon? Mm-hmm. I want to fuck him. And I want to eat him and or fuck him or punch him, something. She is, you know, it's basically rage and lust are the emotions that, you know, that a demon feels. And so she's been looking for him for a while. And for once, Akira is susceptible. So she gets him. And she just when she's got him in her harpy clutches, he decides, like, I don't want this. I want to fight back. Like, this isn't right. He finds himself again, briefly. And so while he's fighting her, And he's almost got her like dead. He's almost torn her in half. I mean, he very literally has. But she's almost out completely when the devil who's been shadowing her, who's been helping her to find her true love, like reveals that he has feelings for her. That, you know, this mm-hmm. devil has learned to love, like actually self-sacrificially love. And he gives her the rest of his strength to try and kill Akira. And he survives, but she dies with like a smile on her face. She dies like happy. And
she dies victorious.
She's
defeated Akira, but she doesn't have the strength to kill him, but he's at her mercy.
Right. And so she's happy about this. And so Ryo shows up and he's like, well, good job. Let's go. And Akira is like, can devils love? Are they not just demons? They're like, they have like feelings and nuances, and like, are they kind of like people? Can they be reasoned with? And Ryo's like, probably not. Let's go.
Yeah, Ryo's like, no, it's just the Northern Lights.
Yeah, let's go. And this gives Akira new purpose. So now instead of why I have to hunt devils and protect humans, he's like, I have to find the line between these two things. I have to accept that I am a devil as well as a human, and maybe they aren't so different after all. And so he starts to try and reason with the devil men around him because he's not the only one. He's not the only person who's, turns out he's not that special after all. Ryo thought he was, but like there are other people who've been taken over by devils and survived. Curiously, they're all pretty gay, which I think is and I'm not being flip. I mean, literally, they're gay. And I think that this is another part of the metaphor that's pretty important. But this is where things start to go badly because Akira tries to reason with a devil man named Coda, who is on the track team and has been using his devil powers to win track meets over and over. And he tries to reason with him that, like, you know, because he's been causing a spree of murders recently. And he's like, look, you know, I've survived this. I'm like you. And what's funny is the conversation that they're having is very vague. And the way that he says, I'm like you, makes it seem like, and the way that Coda, I think, initially interprets it is that he means that he also is sexually attracted to men. And this is not played for comedy. It's played for, like, resonance. It's played for, like, trying to play into the emotional metaphor a little bit. And but Coda has such shame over this, over being a devil and being gay, that he rejects this offer. And then he just – and Akira pushes him too far, and this begins the end of the world, which I think is heralded by a bull chasing a woman – chasing the bride of this, so the whole thing reenacts the Book of Revelation, and there's a big demon bull that I believe chases. I think it's very, very surreal.
Yeah, Akoda's form is, I mean, kind of a hilarious moment where Dio pops the Bible open smack in the middle, and he's just like, Book of Revelation, and he's just like, dude.
Yeah, it's like, Ryo,
if you
we
cut
understand.
Open the Bible in the middle, you're going to be right smack in the middle of Psalms.
Yeah, he's in the middle of Song of Solomon or something. He's not. He's on the wrong page.
I just want to remind you both that he's standing in front of an elevator that just says 666 on it in that show.
The show isn't subtle sometimes.
And I wanted to take a photo of that and be like, this is my interior decoration goals for next year.
Yeah.
Just a single white shelf with my Bible on it next to my 666 elevator.
It's not particularly subtle. But all that to say, say, like, this show is very dense. A lot happens all at once. That pushing him too far, Akira pushing Koda too far, does not result in an ally. It results in the beginning of the end of the world, because for the first time, even though devils have been working in the shadows for a long time and eating people, the transformation of a devil man, like, right in front of everybody, this giant, horrible bull that's ripping people's heads off, is televised, like, nationally. And everybody sees it. And they're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
What is this? And thus begins the end times. So that's something.
The unraveling of society.
Yeah. And so this was kind of where we got most of the focus for these two characters that were not in the original manga that get special focus and episodes dedicated to them.
Miko was. She was quite different, but she was there.
Yeah, but it's a different character, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's basically a different character. And specifically, I said I was going to mention the Abashiri family. Miko totally looks and acts like the tomboy character from the Abashiri family.
Oh, really?
She's like a cool gangster girl.
Oh, cool. All right. Interesting. Yeah. Well, they took a different tack with this. And I thought that these two characters turned out to be really important thematically to, like, what it felt like they were trying to do with this as a departure from what the original manga is actually talking about. Like, thematically, this is very different from that original manga, I think, in some pretty crucial ways, and I think those characters kind of, in many ways, embody that difference. Jacob, you were talking about a metaphor that these two characters embody, and can you go into that a little bit?
Sure. So, like, a lot of people get eaten by demons and stuff like that, and I think it's interesting. Akira, obviously, is pretty straight as an arrow. Now, I know that that will not make the shippers very happy, but I think as portrayed in the story, he's very stereotypically machismo, heterosexual kind of guy, except for the crybaby thing, but that's a very important part of the theme that we'll probably get into later. But having these gay characters and having the other devil men initially around him be gay sends a very important message about what being a devil man really means, which is being a queer kids are forced to address the fact that what the world tells them about what is normal and what is good is wrong much earlier than straight kids are. Miko is not overt about being a lesbian until, like, very late in the story. In fact, a lot of people would probably say that she's bi because she has sex with quite a few men and has fantasies about being fucked by men in the story. But if you read it a certain way, I think it's pretty clear that she's gay.
When, I mean, it was interesting enough that, and also it's just like, you know, outs me as a boring white dude from the suburbs that, like, Miko's big confession, it took a while to hit me. I was like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, that is one part of it.
I had a eureka moment like 4 minutes later. It was pathetic.
No, I mean, that is one part of the show that's pretty subtle, to be honest. Like, you kind of have to have your gaydar on real hard and have a very, like, finely tuned gaydar to catch this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I caught it. I knew that Miko was gay I knew that Miko was gay based on the freestyle rap that Cocoon delivers to her, and she interprets in a different way from what he intended. I was like, oh my god, she's gay. And I was like, well, that can't be, I can't have predicted this, because that just doesn't happen. But, like, no, that's just an example of really good character writing in this, that they came up with a really, really good emotional metaphors for how this feels. And to get back to the point, these queer characters are forced to become devil men earlier than most people. Like, their puberty is, you know, is unpleasant because it is demonized by the world. And they have to, if you're going to survive being gay, you have to accept, I am different and the world is going to think that that's wrong, but I have to love myself and I have to embrace this and say, like, this is real and it's natural and it's not, I'm not sinful or crazy or wrong or I need to be fixed. Like, this has to be accepted much earlier than even if you're still pretty self-loathing about it. Like, these characters are not, Koda and Miko are not self-accepting at this point, but they're further along in that process just because they're forced to.
But I think that's so important that those narratives were in there and that they married that with the Devilman metaphor, which is to embrace yourself as a human beast and embrace everything about yourself. Embrace your flaws and embrace your sins, the things that make you a disgusting animal, embrace them and it will make you powerful, but you have to moderate it and there's a price to be paid for becoming who you really are. And, like, that's a really strong metaphor that spoke to me pretty deeply. And the fact that they went and they're like, okay, you have to, imagine if there weren't any queer characters in this narrative for a narrative like that, about that specifically. Uh-huh. Like, it means so much that they're in there, and it makes it such a stronger story, even if you know, their storylines also dovetail with the fairly nihilist leanings of the way that the rest of the show goes. Like, it felt real. It, at no point is this thing being fake with you about what's going on. And right. I really appreciated that.
There's a broad theme of also, you know, if you reject what society is pushing at you and insist that it's unfair, there's something wrong with you. And, you know, the I think the gay characters really bring that into focus.
Right. It's like everybody else can pretend that they're above above the natural world, or that they're like sort of a superior. Okay, so I'm not going to bury the lead. The whole show being a sort of, not the whole show, but the whole back half of the show being a recreation of the Book of Revelation is meant to specifically draw a parallel to the kind of thinking that is dominant in like really harsh fundamentalist Judeo-Christian circles, which is that you are separate from the natural world, and the only thing that makes you bad is that you like indulged in sinful things or in carnal things. But your default state is this divine being, kind of like Rio, but we'll get to that. And the rest of the world can maybe pretend that. The rest of the world can say like, okay, we just have to find the other and stamp them out and assert our dominance over the planet as like this better than animal thing, and like we have no sin, we have no etc. But like gay characters can't do that, and the Devil Man can't do that, Akira can't do that, because he's a very thoughtful boy, he's a very accepting, empathetic person, and he went through puberty and came out the other side like having to accept that he's got a horrible sex drive and weird feelings about his dad and all this stuff. Like, he had to accept that about himself. He didn't decide to stow it or try to pretend to be like, you know, he wasn't a good Christian boy and like didn't masturbate. You know, he embraced all this stuff about himself. And you know, so it's so that basically it's saying like, be like Akira. You know, acknowledge that you are part of the natural world and that you have these horrible desires, and that part of being human is being kind of fucked up. And but unfortunately,
human society reacts by forming the anti-Devil Man Corps and insisting that we have to hunt down and kill people before they become devils.
Yeah, and it's all very religiously centered. It's like, get everybody in the church, and we're gonna read the dogma to you and tell you how bad this is, etc. Like, we just have to find the others and kill them. Anybody who succumbs to any devil, anything, is the enemy. We kill them, and you're the nice, normal people who have no devil in you. And that's a lie. Of course, that's a lie. And we see that's a lie because we see what happens to poor Taro. He's a little kid who turns into a devil because he thinks he's a devil. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, so why don't we get into the end of the show here when Devil Man has to fight Satan. So let's get into that. Jacob?
You want me to explain?
You're so good at it. I'm sorry. You have this all down flat. Like, you're just –
For me, it's just like, well, the world ends. And isn't it kind of funny that Mickey's dad looks like David Beckham?
Yeah. Sorry,
he is,
Jacob.
He's like the spitting image of David Beckham, and there's a reason for that.
Right, yeah. Right.
If you go back to the original comics in 1972, Mickey's dad in that is the spitting image of George Best, who is basically 1972 David Beckham.
Okay.
It's like, I look at that and it's like, that can't be an accident. I wonder if there's a story behind that. I really hope there is. But yeah, there's some doofy nerd soccer trivia for you.
I seriously doubt that was somehow unintentional or in the slightest.
I absolutely believe it was deliberate. I just thought it was really clever.
Yeah, that's very, very clever. So the basically what point did we get up to? Kind of episode 8-ish.
Yeah, it's everybody's being gunned down in the streets because they think everyone's a devil, and it's
then we get Rio's backstory. Yes. Which changes everything.
Changes everything.
It turns out that he made all the demons, kind of, in a way. So Rio turns out to be the Antichrist. He is Satan, the Lord of Lies, Lucifer himself.
Beelzebub.
The biblical one, too.
Beelzebub two boobs.
Yeah. The biblical one as well. And it turns out that basically, like, he is in a war with God to stop to basically bring back this race of demons that ruled the earth before humanity did, that he preferred, because theirs was a pure society that worshipped the natural order of the social Darwinism, basically, like pure survival of the fittest, just a conquest and a challenge at all times, like no room for anything but strength. That's the way he preferred. That was pure to him. And so it's as you said, like laid out in the Book of Revelations. The Antichrist does what the Antichrist does in the Book of Revelations and successfully convinces humanity to kill itself.
Right. Well, and the way that he convinces humanity is by telling them the exact opposite thing of what he wants, which is by telling them, like, devils are bad and any devils among you you must punish because you are the opposite of, you are divine, you are separate from the natural order. All the stuff that he
it's taking advantage.
Bullshit.
He has the cheat codes for humanity.
Right. All the stuff that he thinks is bullshit, and he's like, you will attain godhood and safety, and your race will reach a new stage of enlightenment if you extinguish this demon menace. And so, he does that, and by doing that, that prompts more devil men to be forced to come out. That prompts the demons to not have to hide in the shadows anymore. It brings about the end times. And Satan is pretty down with this because he's like, well, in a fight of brute force, devils win. So this was stupid, guys. But you can motivate humans to fight and not try to reason if you tell them, like, this is the other. You must persecute them in order to keep your divine humanity. But there is
no
divine
fear. It's fear.
There is no divine humanity. We're all just devils. Some people are convinced of this, and successfully convinced of this. And this sounds kind of straightforward, but it's kind of fucked up when you consider that the Revelation is considered this. It flips the values of the Book of Revelations. The Book of Revelations, all this stuff is framed as like a glorious coming for humanity, a glorious second coming for Christ, and humanity will be saved and stuff like that. And it just takes all those assumptions and flips them, basically by saying that it's wrong. Because humans aren't different from animals. Like, there is no buddy coming to save you. Like, your salvation would be to hybridize, but basically to survive by hybridizing and accepting this animal part of yourself. But they don't do that because they think that there's something better, and there isn't. So,
Yeah.
It goes poorly. So they just get eaten by demons. They just return to the days of the dinosaurs, just like Satan wanted.
Well, there's an important moment for Devil Man. Also, a couple of important moments for Devil Man's the hard shit that he goes through in. Is it all in episode 9 or is it episode 8 and 9?
Which stuff specifically?
Both the little kid stuff and the Miki stuff.
That's spread out a lot.
Okay. It's like 8 and 9.
Yeah, I mean, when does he fight like Psycho Demon Yertle the Turtle? Because that's.
That's
classic. He's forced to extinguish something innocent in order to defeat the evil force.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah, he's got to do that. But there are a couple important, I thought, emotional moments that are sort of heinously dark that seemed really important and come to an emotional climax for Devilman at the end of episode 9. In that his belief that society can be saved is extinguished. Mm-hmm. The show, and I think this kind of brings around one of the other themes of this show, which it seems to have no hope for society, but it has a lot of hope in the individual. Mm-hmm. And that really felt like the point of a lot of that fucking heartache at the end, towards the end of the show. It seemed like it was very much a condemnation of society or what society can become very easily and quickly and has many times throughout history. And contrasting that with the power of the individual to harness his or her own being, basically. And I thought all that hugely upsetting shit that happens in episodes 8 and 9 were moving towards that, but they fucked me up really bad.
It's very intense. It's very difficult to watch. It's very
Well, I mean, you're talking about society unraveling and everyone he ever loved having horrible things happen to them, right?
Yeah, right. Yes, and the ninth episode is called like "Die, You Mortals," right?
Yeah, and the thing is, that's not subtext or a new spin. All of those scenes are right out of the comics.
I'm sure they are, and like it was
that brutal. Hey, kids, read Shonen Jump.
I'm sure. Yeah, exactly, and like it is a dark fucking condemnation of humanity, like as a society, the societies that we build. It's a pretty heavy-handed condemnation of it, and the way that it is expressed is really fucking heavy and dark. And if you're not really ready for it or weren't prepared for it, it will fuck you up. I'm just letting you know as a content warning.
I have to correct myself. It wasn't Shonen Jump. It was Weekly Shonen.
I was about to say, I don't think was Shonen Jump. But that's not
necessarily. It's comics.
That's down the road. It's down the road.
Give it to your
9 year old.
Give it to him.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't recommend this for anyone under the age of 45.
I mean, the anime, sure.
I don't know. I feel like. Looking at Devilman, I kind of look at that just like, man, if I experienced this like when I was, you know, pubescent, I would have thought it was the most amazing, incredible thing in the world.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
You would have been like Taro.
The thing is, here's the thing though. I think
this is so cool.
I think you need the content warning on there so the kids that need to find it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it.
But that's in there, and it was there in the original comics too, and everything, and you figure that's kind of the Go Nagai side of it, right? That's kind of the Go Nagaiest stuff that's kind of in there. But it kind of came together with the rest of the themes, and so Jacob, can you run us through the very end here?
Okay, so at the very end, Miko, just so we don't leave her in the dust, the difference between Coda and Miko, who initially have, for a brief time, a nice sort of gay-lesbian solidarity thing going on, so shout-outs to gay and lesbian solidarity and Devilman Crybaby, but briefly they're buddies, but then they decide to go their separate ways because Coda decides, like, now that sides are divided, that the only way to survive is to by joining the devil side. And that's in keeping with his denial of, because the show is not saying like, oh, just be a devil, just be your base self. Like it's saying like you also have to have those things that we consider divine, those aspects of self-sacrifice and love and empathy, because without them, like, you know, you are no different from an animal. So it's not saying like, just embrace your worst self. But that's what Coda does. And he decides, like, I never loved anybody. I'm just a weird pervert who likes fucking dudes in the ass. And I'm going to join the devils. And that's what gets him killed. And Miko joins the humans, which means she represses. She decides not to. We never, until the very end, we don't see Miko in her devil form because she's repressing. Basically, she's like, well, I'm just a pervert. Yeah. I just really admire this other girl and want to be her. And she tries to have sex with guys and it just doesn't work. And, you know, she resents herself for looking the way that she does and all this other stuff. And then she finally accepts. She's like, I don't hate you. I love you. I'm in love with you, Miki. And when she does that, she's able to turn into a giant spider and run really fast and carry Miki to safety. And it's very moving, but she also dies. But I was just bringing that up as like, that's what happens to those characters since we talked about them a fair amount. But the rest of the characters who she's with, like, also die horrible deaths as the core hunts them down. And poor Miki, Akira's love interest, who probably also loved him back, gets stabbed in the back and cut into pieces, and her head is carried around a pike. It's very bad. Anyway, so Akira sees all this, and he's just at the edge of despair, and he can't handle it anymore, and he buries his girlfriend's head, and he goes to confront Ryo on the moon. I think they're on the moon.
Yep.
Yeah, so they go to the moon, and Ryo drops his whole backstory for Akira, tells him why he wants a world of demons, and he's like...
There's a really funny moment where he just says, so, I'm Satan.
He does! It's really good.
It's almost as good as the line right after that where one of the devils says, hurry up and eat all the people before God comes back.
There is, I mean, if you're really...
It's really good.
It's not funny at the time, but...
I laughed. I burst into laughter.
I remember that line very well.
it's not like funny haha because you're sort of wrapped up in the horror and drama of what's happening. Yeah. But like, I mean, it is, it's pretty good. You know, it's pretty funny too. Anyway, so he's like, well, God's going to salt the earth if we don't get this done. He's like, but Akira, I spared you because... The whole reason he realizes that even though he didn't have his memories of being Satan originally, the reason that he wanted to bring that he wanted specifically Akira to become Devilman is because he wanted to carry him into the next world with him. And Akira has no patience for this bullshit. So they go at it and they start punching each other. And Akira tries to get him to understand. He goes into full cry mode. So Akira as Devilman is weeping heavily while he punches Satan. What a weird show. And he says, and he's like, you know, all these sacrifices, all these people that mattered to me, to everything. And Satan just doesn't get it. And he's like, I don't get why you're fighting. We just stop fighting and, like, rule over the world together, you and I. That's not gay or anything. He finally just takes things to their absolute limit and kills Akira. There's nothing left of him but his top half. And in this moment, Satan realizes that he was in love with him. That this wasn't like he loved everything about Akira that he said he hated about humans. He loved his empathy and he loved his sensitivity. And, you know, and Akira was the only person who had enough, like, the depth of compassion in his heart to befriend Ryo, who is just a merciless, selfish psychopath.
Well, he's Satan.
Yeah, he's Satan, so... Akira didn't know he was literally
Satan.
He's the
devil.
Yeah.
But as a kid, like, that was the only friend that he ever had, and he realizes, like, you know, basically the efforts of Akira's entire life taught Satan how to love, and that's the brightest little point of light that we have in this otherwise dark ending, as God comes back, says, "What the fuck is this?" and salts the earth, and is that Satan will, in his next incarnation, when he is inevitably reborn... knows love now, and he loves loss, and he knows empathy, and therefore, like, that means that the Satan of the revelation of the Bible, all this stuff, like, and all the divine forces that we think are separate and we can, like, bring ourselves closer to as humans are just as human as us. Just like the devils, all that stuff is just human invention and human logic, and we should just accept each other as we are, old, ancient instincts and modern aspirations and all, and stop trying to separate these things, because, you know, that's the only path forward without killing each other for seeing evil where there isn't. And that's Devilman Crybaby, ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba-ba.
To quote, you know, my favorite rock and roll band, The Hold Steady, we are our only saviors.
Right.
I was really hoping for a credit thing, like halfway through the end credits, where it just cuts to God, like, turning away and going, like, boy, I don't know what happened there.
I need to put it back in for about 10 more.
Yeah.
10 more millennia.
Back to
it's
the credits.
Not done.
Yeah.
The God with his hand on his hips being like, "Satan, you get out here and clean this mess up."
I knew I shouldn't have gone to the store.
But now, in fairness, I think God is the enemy here. Like, I think, what a shock.
Oh, yeah.
God's the enemy.
Yeah, he's
Japanese
being framed as the enemy. And also, like, the story as it exists, the themes would fall apart if there were an actual hero. Mm-hmm. If there were, like, a real hero, like, "Hello, I am the crusader of God, and therefore all that is right." Mm-hmm. Unless you were commenting on that, that character existing would just be like, this eliminates all your other themes. Mm-hmm. Also, completely contradicts what the story is trying to tell you. So, like, there's no room for that kind of person doesn't exist in the world of Devilman, because Devilman is more concerned with actual humanity. Like, that's what it's concerning itself with.
There's no, like, high ideals to strive for, and you should strive for them just so you don't become your worst self. Like, it's important that people remain humans and Devilmen and not pure devils. Like, we can't just be animals, but it's like, there's not, like, an idealist. I mean, the closest we... No, that's not totally fair, because the closest we get is Miki, and that's sort of a holdover, like, you have this idealized pure girlfriend character, and I didn't really have a problem with that, because there were more diverse range of female characters in it, but she's the closest we get to, like, pure good.
She does represent, like, it feels like the character is there to represent, like, here's what we can strive towards. You'll probably get ripped apart when society eventually gets afraid enough.
She's a little bit goofily chaste in this version.
Yeah.
She's a little rambunctious and a little dirty-minded in the comics.
Right. They changed her to be a representative of, like, the best among us that won't survive. Akira is the one that will survive and can enact change because he's a little dirty. Okay, a lot dirty.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, but it's like, yeah, there are pure good people out there, but they just don't have the stamina to survive a horrible world. You kind of have to be more like Akira if you want to survive. It doesn't make you better. It's not saying Miki's weak because of this, because that would be a shitty way to look at it. But it's, you know, she's the closest thing to a pure warrior of God sort of thing. And she just doesn't make it, you know.
No, but I mean, there's a very dim view of the world we've been left. Like, in many ways, God is just absent and doesn't give a shit about you.
Yeah, we never see God. It's very important.
He shows up at the very end to be like, "I don't know what the fuck happened here, but I'm not going to deal with it."
Well, he doesn't even show up. It's just bombs. The earth is turned to salt again.
Yeah,
that's
basically.
It.
Yeah.
And so, like,
just
in the end,
like in the Bible.
Yeah, and in the end, like, what I took away from it, like, Jacob and I had some long conversations about this, and what I took away from it was something that at least this, because I feel like this is a lot, like, a lot of these apocalypse shows, these complicated quality apocalypse shows, you can read it a bunch of different ways. There's a lot of different angles, a lot of different layers, like, even the stuff we've been talking about here, like, there's 4 or 5, 6 layers deep you can go on any of this stuff, it feels like. And the show is open-ended up and kind of messy enough around the edges to really allow a lot of different kinds of interpretations, you know, all kind of along the same lines, but it feels like it really is open in the same way that something like Evangelion is. But in the end, what I ultimately took from it was that, you know, the Devilman metaphor that we've kind of talked about, being pitted against this avatar of sort of quote unquote ration and logic, which is to say, denying your emotions, denying your humanity, the thing that makes you human, the things that makes you an animal, denying that stuff is destructive to a bizarre extreme. And not only that, teaching somebody empathy, teaching someone to see it from a single issue, from a single different angle, is so unbelievably difficult and wrenching and hard. And like, I don't know if, like, I've had these conversations where I was desperately trying to convince someone to empathize with my situation or with another person's situation. And it was painful and hard and like exhausting in the way that watching Devilman Crybaby is painful and exhausting in times. And the bit at the end where he finally sees it is both beautiful and profound and also, like, I thought fairly representative of what it's like to try and convince someone to give a shit about somebody else. Like, you know, like, he represents all of the all the terrible, egotistical, self-serving bullshit flaws that humanity has, the divinity that we assign ourselves, right? Like, he's an avatar for that.
He assumes superiority.
Yeah, he assumes superiority. And, like, as he's portrayed as a human creation of the – like, he's basically a creation. And, like – That all dovetails in and of itself to say, like, this is sort of anti-human in a way. And the fact that it takes that much to turn him, to get him to see any kind of empathy at all for anybody is just, like, commenting on, like, here's, like, how fucking hard this is to just bring someone that's this convinced of themselves, that this convinced that they're personally divine or whatever. They speak to God. They have the answers. The creator has an intimate relationship with them. To get them to see your side on fucking anything,
that's why religion
feels like the Devilman end of the world. Yeah, and well, like, that's what I took away from it.
That's why religion is such a big part of the story. Yeah. You'd be like, oh, well, can't you just say, like, oh, humans are naturally violent and make that the apocalypse? It's like, no, because it isn't about just people fighting back against devils because they're afraid or because that's human nature, because devils are supposed to be the ugly, they're supposed to be that violent human nature. What's fighting them is self-righteousness, not pure animal id. It's self-righteousness fighting id, and self-righteousness is the bad side, you know? Like, I mean, like, they're both bad to some extremes.
This is a story that's about, don't turn away from the parts of you that are complicated and are troublesome. I'm sorry. I just suddenly remembered. Also, this show got the world talking about the magic of Psycho Jenny.
Yeah, she's a charmer.
I want a doll. Like, I'm sure they'll make dolls.
Yeah, yeah, and that's I think that's a character that appeared in like one or two panels of the original, like just a throwaway weird Gona Guy thing, and like, oh wow.
I just
talk about giving old images new life.
In every board scene from now on, I just want them to at some point ask Psycho Jenny for her opinion and cut to Psycho Jenny at the board meeting.
Cut to Psycho Jenny
at the boardroom table.
What do you think, Psycho Jenny? Cuts to Psycho.
But what I was going to say is, like, you were talking about, like, how that self-righteousness is just really, like, you can't bury your emotions and your id. You can't bury those things about you, like, that hard. Not even Satan. Not even Rio, like, the most passive, only wears white, psychopathic, asexual being in the story. He can't do it because, like, the opening scene and the closing scene of the whole show is a scene where, lost my train of thought, Akira is crying over a kitten that has, like, mange and is dying because this is a sad show. And Ryo's like, shut up, stop crying, and he's angry. And the way he thinks about it in his head at the beginning of the show is I was angry at you because you wouldn't stop crying over this pointless thing. Like, everything dies. Like, he's framing it as logic. And you maybe take him at his word at the beginning, I guess. You can if you want to, but by the end, it seems so obvious that the reason that he's upset and he's like, I'll kill this kitten, is because he's upset that it's making Akira cry. It is emotional. It is personal for him. It's based in love and empathy and frustration for him. It's based in these ugly, messy emotions. But he's framing it as, you're being illogical and I'm upset that you're wasting my time being illogical. That's not what it is at all. And so, yeah, like, Satan was always human. He was always just as messed up as everybody else.
Yeah, which, you know, is something, if you spent time on the internet, you might be familiar with arguing with someone who frames all of their opinions as though this is the rational and logical view, and your feelings are irrational emotions, but mine are logic and reason.
Which, yep.
Yeah.
Been a lot of that going around lately. Boy, howdy.
Yeah. So that's kind of Devilman Crybaby. Jacob, you had like you had an angle on it that I thought was really fascinating from an organized religion perspective, if you wanted to dive into that a bit.
I think I already talked about it. Like, I already said
that kind of got stuff. It, you think?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. It isn't just nihilist, humanity is naturally violent, but like specifically this is about the kind of violence that comes from self-righteousness and comes from othering things that you
absolutely.
Are.
Absolutely. I would agree with that 100%.
Yeah.
Which is very important because there's a lot of stories like this that are just based on like something, a Zodiac War, which Nisi Oisin wrote, which was just like, religions can't get along and people are selfish and greedy. And like those things are true. It's just that I think it's more interesting to talk about an end of the world story where you're not just like, humanity's bad. It's bad for 20 reasons that I won't get into. And you just go, humanity's bad for this one reason. And you talk a very long time about the one reason. It doesn't mean there aren't other reasons, but it just means you're making a more salient point.
Focus.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, any other thoughts before we head into the Twitter questions?
I just think it's an incredibly cool show. I thought it was thoroughly enjoyable and utterly mystified by people speculating on the possibility of like a sequel.
Yeah.
What the fuck? It's over.
Guys, let it stand. Come on.
It starts with the creation of life anew on Earth. And then just goes from there, I guess. The sequel is just a primordial soup for like a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would take a while.
Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead and get to these Twitter questions. I mean, we didn't talk about how fucking cool it is, which it's incredibly fucking dope from start to finish. Music, animation, everything about it is basically flawless.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I thought about this show was how, and I'm sure, you know, maybe this is a Netflix thing, but I think this is just the way they wrote it. Incredibly propulsive the entire way through. I don't recommend that you shotgun this thing, but I can't tell you that you'll be able to stop watching
it.
You won't be able to.
This show has an incredible sense of momentum.
Yeah. And you cannot wait to see what is going to happen next. Uh-huh. So, like, once you start, once you pop, it is difficult to stop, I would say. So be warned. It's
incredibly cool. I love that shot of the giant titty harpy with no eyes and a huge toothed beak flying over the orgy and just smashing people.
I took a screenshot.
Really
I took a photo of the screen when like a giant lady with a huge mouth for an ass.
Yeah.
Like it's just an ass mouth.
Ass mouth.
With, like a giant tongue coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So would you guys say that this was just like a pure, just premium grade A show all the way through?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, I think it was excellent.
I really would put it in the same box as like Wolf's Rain and...
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's fatigue setting in. I felt like it did have a couple of dead spots. Like, you know, as the world is starting to unravel, Miki has this big impassioned speech. I thought that was a bit flat.
You think so?
There are a couple of aspects. Yeah, there are a couple of aspects of it that are just like, he's not really selling it.
The thing is, the point of that I thought was the social media reaction that they were showing while it was happening.
Yeah, which is everybody saying, fuck you.
Yeah, which is incredibly bummed me out. Like, that whole fucking episode was such a cosmic bummer.
Yeah. I mean, part of it is just, she's making the plea for humanity, and no,
and
of course
they rejected it, but like
rise to the occasion.
There were some people who did. I appreciated that it wasn't universally fuck you, it was just too many fuck yous to overcome. But the people who did, like my favorite line in that big text log, because it was so unsubtle, because it's like, just in case you don't get the metaphor yet, was the guy saying, I'm going to tell my wife that I'm a devil man.
Yeah.
Which was, I was like, if this doesn't hammer it home to you that this is not a super literal kind of story, I don't know what will.
Yeah, that's going to go down as, I think, one of the great quotable lines from that show.
I'm going to tell my wife that I'm a devil man.
Devil man, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing is, like, I get what you're saying. Like, I would this is not, like, it's in the same box as those, but I wouldn't put it on the same, like, it's not necessarily, like, easy number five on a list of, like, the best of these, because some of the stuff that we're talking about is, like, the best anime ever made, like, a lot of it. I needed some distance and space from it before making that kind of a proclamation, but I do think that
and also maybe I'm being too hard on the story and I just need to watch it again because it's hard to absorb so much.
Well, no, I think I had the same kind of disconnect, man. Like, I'm kind of on the same page with you because, like, I feel this way about it, but, like, it dips so hard at the end. into such nasty fucking territory. It's such a horrible fucking bummer that, like, I struggled with it afterwards. I still feel like it's going to take me a while to get over it. And because it crashes so hard and it's so hard, it's so tough to watch, it's so rough to feel that way. It's hard. It's a qualified recommendation for me. Can you stomach it?
Yeah. Are you down for this?
Yeah.
Are you down for it? Because and I don't think it's like a, you know, like, oh yeah, well, you know, just like Evangelion had this really, it turned out, surprisingly broad appeal. I still wouldn't just casually throw out, like, yeah, watch End of Evangelion. I would say prepare yourself for this. Here's what it's like. Decide whether or not you're ready for it.
Yeah, like a ton of people love Evangelion and Utena, but I don't. I'm like, why? Because like it is not an easy thing. It's one of those things, like, you get really lucky and you get something that transcends its off-putting or daring and challenging nature that actually just everybody seems to love, regardless of how challenging it is. Not everybody love, but like a lot of people.
But
do.
Just because it has a broad appeal, I think I would still shy away from making broad recommendations or saying like, yeah, I think everyone should see this, or really even putting it in like a unqualified, you should watch Devilman Crybaby. Like, there's a certain type of guy who I'm going to recommend this to. There's a certain type of person I'm going to recommend it to. And that dip at the end is what prevents me, I think, from saying like, yes, unqualified masterpiece, absolutely put it in the same, you know, category as like a Princess Mononoke or something like that. Like, I think it actually gets kind of close, which is fucking amazing, but I'm not like, I need to see it again in a year from
because
now.
At the end of the day, Devilman, right?
Yeah. And
it's
I still,
astonishing thing.
Yeah. And I feel like a year from now, I'm going to watch this again and then make my decision. And I'm going to think about it probably at least once a month until then, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and also touching on that once again, I think the triumph of this show is not just establishing a really, really intense, exciting, brand new Devilman story. It's also in the way it reveals the genius at the core of Nagai's original story.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Why it was so like influential, and it just took like many years and refinements and some fresh eyes to like make it relevant again.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just the fact that intellectually, you know, I always knew that, you know, that the original comics were this grim nihilistic, you know, seminal piece, but you never examine it that way until you see something like this, and that's really valuable.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
You just think like da 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 da.
Yeah. You just think
Devilman,
and yeah, I want to watch him rip demons in half.
Okay, so let's go ahead. I think we're ready for these Twitter questions, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
A Tasty Sub asks, "There's a lot of mustard blood in Crybaby. What condiment do you think more anime characters need to be filled with?"
Guac.
Boy, guacamole would be interesting.
Nice and chunky.
Guacamole, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. Just like a squeeze bag of guacamole.
Yeah.
It's like a,
at least the blood isn't like purple. I've seen a lot of that in recent TV anime when there's a bloody scene. They make the blood purple to make it look less like blood. And
it's such a dark palette most of the time that I'm glad the blood's yellow. You know, brings it out, really.
Yeah, it's a striking contrast.
All right. Grant the Thief wants to know, due to this work's nature as an adaptation, is there an element or a theme that you're glad they kept, or something you wish they'd left out, a component of the original that you wish they'd kept in? Mike, any thoughts?
Yeah. My thought is that one of the pivotal moments of the show is when one of the generals of hell, like the Lord of Demons, Zenon, appears before mankind. And I actually think that in the TV show, it falls a little short. There's a tension to the original comics that's kind of amazing, because Zenon specifically is like, okay, the end of the world will begin. He reveals himself to every human on the planet and says, the end of the world begins in 5 minutes. That, and then vanishes. Yeah. So the entire human race has this, you know, this quiet little nervous breakdown as they prepare for God knows what.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, it does kind of feel as though, like, every threat except Ryo is totally incredible, like, uncredible, not credible in this. Yeah. You're just waiting for him to fight Ryo, and the other stuff is kind of handled as, like, this too. But maybe that's one of those things that in the end, I'm not sure. Like, I still walked away with a bit of an empty feeling, you know?
But Zenon's appearance in the show is one of those moments that, like, he does his thing and then he's gone. Just like, oh, he's gone already? Yeah. I was hoping he would hang around for, like, a whole episode.
Yeah, I mean, like, those middle episodes, it feels like that stuff kind of parallels the two characters, the two other Devilmen that we were talking about. Like, extra stuff that is here. And like, I feel like the other two characters get out, they make out much better than the other devils, especially Xenon, like you were saying. I feel like that stuff kind of gets the short end of the stick. Development-wise,
there's this weird history in society to the devil race that you only get the surface of with Crybaby.
I started laughing my ass off when, there are these weird spikes of humor just because you're trying to, laugh to keep from crying, and when Satan's explaining the history of the world, like, I was following the metaphor really well, so I was like. I guess the devils are just like animal nature, and then they showed he's like, devils were just dinosaurs, and he started laughing my ass off because it's T Rex and it's pterodactyl and stuff like that, but they just have goofy fangs and 20 colors, and I was dying. It's just like dinosaurs were demons.
All right.
Which is actually, I think, a weird theory that, like, some Christian sects have.
That is an existing, like, that they were actually demons.
But it's really funny in animation.
It's really old.
It's really funny in animation, though.
Okay. Kyle Cardine, our pal, asks, as someone who is honestly unfamiliar with a lot of Yuasa and Nagai work, could you parse out when a scene was more influenced by Yuasa or Nagai? Or is the show a good, consistent melding of the two? Actually, I think that's all true. Most of the time, it's a good, consistent melding. However, there are some scenes where I was like, this is a Yuasa thing. More like cuts, individual cuts of animation, I can tell, are like he does the frog mouth thing. He likes doing that frog mouth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And also, the Devil Man Run, that is pure Yuasa. That is not like a going manga thing at all.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to talk about the Devil Man Run real quick. The Devil Man Run. So
everyone's doing it.
Everybody's doing it, but I want to bring it up because just like all this other stuff where it's like, oh, it's this cool, funny thing, but it is made to tie into the story's themes, which I think is really cool and brilliant. But like the reason that they run completely different, they don't just run a lot faster or something, is because they're trying to draw a very distinct line between the metaphor as running as living your life, basically. Running is the burden of having to live and what you pursue. What are you after? And the Devil Man Running means you're going to win a race. Like, you know, nobody's going to be able to catch that. But specifically when they show Devil Man Running or Demon Running, the goal is to win. And so it's a metaphor for, like, survival of the fittest. Like, you're going to come out on top. Like, in life, you will be the conqueror if you succumb completely to this devil nature. But as they show, like, with Miki and with Akira's human side, like, the real joy that they take from running isn't winning. It's passing the baton. So, like, that's the human metaphor.
Really race metaphor that I can't believe we haven't really touched on before.
Yeah, I was like, this is really important. We should probably touch it. But yeah, like, that Miki, she dies with this in her mind as, like, the reason that they run is not to win. It's not to do the crazy devil man run and win. It's a metaphor for love. It's a metaphor of giving yourself over to another person and trust and all those things that are the divine aspect
of society. And just like society, the relay inevitably breaks down.
Yeah, she doesn't complete the relay because that part of humanity has become lost. And I thought that was really brilliant. It's like, oh, okay, you're drawing this nice line between. It's like, yeah, we're not gods or whatever, but like we're not monsters either. You don't want to do the Devil Man Run. Like, you're not getting anything out of the race from that. And Coda can never Devil Man Run fast enough to get away from the fact that he likes dudes. He can't do it. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, like I said, a lot of layers.
Yes.
Like we've talked for almost an hour and a half now, and it's like, oh yeah, right. There's that one really big theme.
One extremely pivotal metaphor that runs through the entire series. Yeah. That we're just now getting to.
Yeah.
And when you kill your parents, you gotta look for other people to attach to. I guess is what they were doing with the whole finding love in people thing. I don't know, it's very elaborate. It's very interesting.
All right, Schrodinger's Matt wants to know, would the series have benefited from a weekly broadcast, or was releasing it all at once the right way to go? I'm sort of glad that they released it all at once. Yeah. I feel like you shouldn't watch it all at once, but that's, you know.
You will, won't you?
Look, that goes into the metaphor, right? Like, you can become a devil and just watch it all at once. Or you could grapple with it. And control your baser instincts.
Nope.
And only watch half.
I'm going to tell my husband I'm a devil man.
Yeah. The we have food at home side of the argument.
That meme is going to be dead by the time this comes out.
Yep.
The McDonald's meme. That's also inescapable.
Yeah. Does anyone know anything about how the Netflix model affects production for anime, or what it would mean for the industry if more shows were made this way? Well, I don't know the exact production circumstances around.
It's not so much a Netflix model. It's just that if Netflix pumps some money in and makes themselves the primary, or I believe in the case of Devilman Crybaby, the sole platform.
Yeah.
The guys making the animation are less subject to the whirlwind of sponsors and editorial pressure that they'd normally deal with.
Yeah, no production committee, and hopefully an easier deadline.
Specifically, the Trigger guys, when they were talking about Little Witch Academia earlier this summer at Anime Next, said that they liked working with Netflix.
Yeah, I would imagine so, because
less pressure.
Not only are you not beholden to a production committee, you're not beholden to a broadcast deadline. So,
Little Witch Academia, that did come out weekly in Japan.
In the case of Devilman Crybaby, which is a little bit more of a pure example of this, I think, they're not beholden to a production deadline. So, like, there were dips. Like, I think episode 7 or so is around when I started noticing some dips. But then it picked back up again. I don't know. It's a Yuasa show through and through. So, like, some of it looks kind of crummy, but I just kind of expect that. Will, Old Benga Badamus says, will the success of Crybaby, oh, man, okay, it's getting late. Will the success of Crybaby lead to things like the sequel to Shin Mazinger getting made? I don't know.
No. I think if anything leads to the success of Shin Mazinger getting made, it would be the success of Mazinger Infinity.
Yeah. Right.
Because that's the Mazinger thing that's coming out now. You don't need to pine for another Mazinger thing. We're getting one, okay? And it's unfortunate that it's not a sequel to Shin Mazinger, but I'll take what I can get.
Speaking of going to guy stuff, Sasquatchulus asks, with Violence Jack being a weird semi-sequel to Devilman, do you think it's possible to make a good Violence Jack anime?
Well, the Violence Jack got good. I don't know what he's talking about.
If that's what you go to something... I feel like Violence Jack is what it says on the cover.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly what it says on the tin. And it has one of those classic Manga UK dubbed in Wales, the so-called fuck and piss dub style.
Yeah. I don't think that Devilman Crybaby is going to ignite some kind of Go Nagai renaissance. I hope that it means more manga gets released. But his stuff is pretty fucking inaccessible.
And the 70s and 80s reboot renaissance is already upon us. Like, that was part of a broad as Devilman Crybaby. So, like, you know, that's we're already kind of in that a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. It's there's not going to be some huge groundswell of new Go Nagai creative projects.
Well, I can adapt the next... Go ahead, Mike.
I mean, partly because there's been a steady stream of them for many, many years now.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
We got a remake of... and McCoon. We've gotten multiple Mazinger shows. We got a sequel of Kotetsu Jeek, for Christ's sake, and a new Cutie Honey is right around the corner.
That's true.
Well, so let me adapt that question. The next question is from Final Fury K, and he wants to know if you could pick anything from the Go Nagai library to get a modern remake, what would you want and who would direct it? I guess this is more for Mike.
That's an interesting question. I would say, just based on what I know about it, having only seen a little bit of the media and knowing about the end of it, I would love to see a modern interpretation of Harenchi Gakuen, one of his first big hits. I think that translates to like Shameless School, but it's basically just, it's a schoolyard comedy, only it's a little more perverse and violent than you'd expect because it's going a guy. And that was the manga that came out caused such an uproar that the publisher wanted to cancel it, and the guy was just like, I'll write an ending for you. And in the ending, it's just a huge orgy of violence and machine gun fire, and everyone dies, comedy deaths. But yeah, just like all just, oh, well, I'm just going to kill the whole thing. Got the right director, like maybe a Kazuya Tsunemaki, someone who's good at like loose stuff, but also kinetic action, Tsunemaki Imaichi. It could be pretty cool.
Yeah. That would be cool. Yeah, I think I'm pretty open to pretty much anything at this point. You tell me, like, oh, we're adapting some Go Nagai. I'm like, all right, I'll be there. Sure.
Yeah, we'll check it out.
Yeah, at this point. Okay. GV Superman X says, is anime finally saved? All right, I hate that question. That's a personal question. Anime gets saved for you personally. So I'm glad it was saved for you, my friend. I am very glad about that. He says, I hope we get more like it. Don't hold your breath.
I mean, I think it's doing well for Netflix, right?
Yeah, but look, this is when you get something like this, it's important to recognize it as creative alchemy.
Yes.
And the idea that you can just pull them off of an assembly line is false.
I'm not saying that good. I'm saying like the staff will get more work.
Yeah, sure, but more like this, I mean, it's singular. Yeah.
Well,
it's
singular. Listen, I'm sorry. You weren't paying attention, Mr. Man, but the actual show that saved anime on Netflix was ID Zero.
Ah, jeez.
You weren't looking. Yeah.
Nobody was looking at that.
I watched a little of it. It seemed all right, but it just got bored.
Jacob watched the whole thing for This Week in Anime.
It was one of the most boring things I've ever sat through.
Okay, so it doesn't get good later.
No, it does not.
All right, Carl Erickson wants to know. Well, these speculative questions are kind of hard to answer. Now that it's been Netflix's fastest viewed anime original, how many more producers are going to take?
Wait, how is he substantiate? Yeah, I know what you mean, Zach. How do you substantiate that?
Yeah,
he says
there's a Sakuga Boru like reported on this, and I guess someone at Aniplex said this or something like that. I wouldn't disbelieve it, like. But I don't know how to qualify that.
Get it on the record. Someone email. I could try emailing Eric Barmack or, you know, someone.
Yeah, I could send him an email. I mean, I think our news team is actually trying already. I'm sure they are already doing something.
Aniplex are obviously going to say, oh, yeah, super.
Well, they're limited in what they can say by Netflix. Netflix holds this stuff very close to the chest. Until they want to tell you, then they just tell you.
I wouldn't doubt that the people who, like, immediately wanted to watch it accidentally shotgunned it, because that's what happened to all of us. Yeah. So that's the fastest watch meeting.
We were just talking about
everybody
how
excited to watch it, watched it all at one.
Yeah, it turns out everyone was like, oh, I can't stop watching this.
I think that was a phenomenon. I think that actually was pretty widespread, but we don't know the numbers.
Yeah.
But anyway, what was his actual question?
How many more producers are going to take their dream investments to Netflix and get approved? Like how you also got approached by an Aniplex producer to make Crybaby after the deal with Netflix. So, yeah, this is all based on a Sakuga Boru article. In terms of like other producers, like, look, Netflix is making an enormous investment in anime this year. You are going to see a lot of, like, what is it, 30 shows this year are just coming from Netflix? So, like,
was it this year or like over the next 2 or 3 years?
Well, I'm sure that they're investing in something like 30 shows, and it's probably more than that. But we will see. It's too early to say, like, what does this mean? What does this mean for the industry? What does this mean for all this stuff? Like, it's so hard to think of fantastically successful Go Nagai adaptation is such a weird fucking thing to say. That is so weird. That would be like, you know, oh, well, now that this Saber Marionette J reboot is proven to be the most successful thing anyone's seen. And we're like,
hey, wait a minute. Where are they with that? They're making that, right?
Yeah, they're making
it. That's happening.
It's coming. Yeah. but it is weird, like, because this is something that only weirdos like us really knew about, right?
yeah. But, you know, you have a platform like Netflix who will look at its algorithm and be like, oh, well, you know, the, you know, 40 something father of three watched 9 episodes of Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood a year and a half ago. So let us just put this on the front page.
Yeah.
Of his Netflix for a week and see if he bites.
Gee, that lady's boobs sure are eating those two dudes.
Yeah. And there's a like, that stuff is all really important to the show's appeal.
Yeah.
Okay. Kwame asks, why did you also want to retell this story? I think if you watch it, it will be very clear. Knowing what you know of his work, does the source material suit his interests? Yes. Having seen it, it does.
Yeah, and not just that. People are like, well, this is different for you also because they've seen Kaiba or Ping Pong. It's like, Kamunamozume, which I haven't seen, but I've seen the clips from, you know what they are, like, and Mind Game, which I have seen, like, not really outside his wheelhouse. That's how he entered the industry, was like, dicks and boobs, here you are.
And also, you know, Yuasa is very fond of mainstream anime. You know, he also worked on a whole lot of Crayon Shin-chan. I remember when I met him at Anime Expo in 2013, he was very vocal about, he kind of regretted never getting to work on Naruto. Like, he would love the chance to do an episode of Naruto. Never happened.
He could do a Boruto.
Yeah, I know.
We're getting a lot of questions about the Violet Evergarden. I don't know what Does anybody know why it's not airing in the U.S.? I assume for contract reasons or for something. It has to be some business thing that...
It's some strategic decision that Netflix U.S. is doing and no one else is doing. And, you know, I'm not even going to worry about it because, you know... There's enough stuff to keep me busy until the whole thing suddenly appears and I can watch it all.
I'm pretty sure they have some sort of data that suggests to them, look, Americans only want to fucking binge things. That's it. No non-binging shows.
If we try to do this an episode at a time, it'll make people mad.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. They'll just get angry and drop the service after they've raised it to $15 a month or whatever it is. I assume they have some data that suggests to them the show is more valuable to them as a block in the U.S. than it is elsewhere. Speaking as somebody who has to consume this stuff week to week, it's extremely annoying. And this is we're going to be reviewing this show week to week. I think our Japan correspondent is going to wind up doing it. I can't watch it.
Also, I mean, geographic blocks are right up there with region codes in terms of, I understand why they do this. It's a commercial thing, but it's so tiresome.
Yeah, it's really tired.
You think you can control this? Well, let me fire up my VPN. We'll see who gets to watch what.
Can you just turn on a VPN and check it to Canada and get the show? Does that work, or do you have to have a Canadian Netflix account?
It might be Netflix. Netflix in particular takes that problem seriously, and their servers might be too smart for that.
Yeah. Also, they don't want you to do it. So.
I haven't tried it. Yeah. Exactly.
I have no. Yeah. Because I can't. What can I do with that? Nothing. I can't I can't live tweet the fucking show. I'm not supposed to be watching it through a VPN. You know. So it sucks. Just fucking put it out at the same time. God damn it. Anyway. Branko Bergson wants to know, does Devilman Crybaby give you more confidence in Netflix original anime? Sure. I mean, look, if this is the kind of freedom that they're going to give them, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. If this is, and if they're willing to take risks on unconventional shows, absolutely. More power to them. It's great.
Ruben Baron asks, given all the extreme content and wonder that is the OVA dub, why is the Devilman Crybaby dub so clean? Seriously, situations that intense, you'd be using a different word than screw. I didn't watch the dub. Did you watch the dub?
Thing dubbed. I switched a couple of episodes on subtitled just to hear the performances, but I watched the entire thing dubbed. And my theory there would be that they want something that can be later repackaged for TV and home video, because there are English-speaking countries and cultures that take a dim view of profanity.
Yep, and they'll be fine with the rest of the content, but swearing...
Swearing is a problem.
Only vagina dentata here, none of this naughty language.
Yeah.
God, I hope they put out a Blu-ray. Please, someone put a Blu-ray out.
I think it'll happen.
I want to own it. I need a physical copy. Okay. Patrick Jones asks, I heard some people talking about the ending or how the ending reminded them of the end of Evangelion. Is this a valid comparison? Yes, because Devilman inspired the end of Evangelion, which has now inspired Devilman Crybaby.
Crybaby, yes.
Time moves in a flat circle.
That big red ocean at the end of Evangelion with the two people the big red ocean anyway is a direct Devilman call out. That's a direct end of the world in Devilman imagery. And then he mirrors it again in Devilman Crybaby. And the two are both emotional apocalypses. So yes, I would say that is the thing it reminded me most of, I would say, almost. Which is weird when you're watching something that reminds you of End of Evangelion. That's a weird movie to be reminded of. If you're watching something else,
that bit when Psycho Jenny is sitting in a spiral, in a rainbow spiral, while three spears pierce her and twist around, like that's just End of Eva.
Pour one out for Psycho Jenny.
Poor Psycho Jenny. I think she survived that actually.
Okay, let's see. Okay, this is the last question. Theozilla asks, if it's enough of a success that Netflix would hypothetically want to produce more Devilman, which of the spin-offs would be actually good to adapt? This, of course, comes with the presumption that the hypothetical creative team would be allowed similar creative freedom in the adaptation process. So, do you think that there's thematic? Do you think there's enough good stuff in another Devilman story to make something that would stand along with this, or is it pretty much diminishing returns?
I mean, I remember the 2000s Devilman Lady series, and that was all right, I guess.
Yeah.
But again, just thinking back, that felt more like a conventional superhero, dark superhero thing than anything really, really surprising and daring.
Yeah.
Beyond that, it's like I'm not familiar enough with the various Devilman manga ephemera to really speculate.
How well do you know Devilman Lady?
Well, like I said, I think I saw the first third of it, and it felt more like just a supernatural superhero show where it's like, you know, it's a lady having a war for herself while she fights monsters. Yeah. I never got far enough into it to see if our favorite anime script writer, Chiaki Konaka, did anything really, really out there.
Yeah.
As he's sometimes known to do. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's something that you could really reinvent in the same way.
If Yogg-Sothoth shows up, he was then it was definitely a Konaka joint.
Also, Devilman Crybaby is the second like cool exclusive Netflix thing to have Devilman in it. You're leaving out Devilman versus Cyborg 009.
Is that worth? If you liked Devilman Crybaby, should you watch that?
Maybe.
They're very dissimilar.
It is recognizably Akira Fudo and Miki, and I think Ryo is in there too. And it's just like, yeah, it's a slam bang action cartoon with not a lot of emotional baggage. But if you just want to see those characters again in kind of a different light, then yeah, they're there.
I feel like this is such a singular
really cartoon.
Yeah, I feel like Devilman Crybaby is a very singular thing, and that if it's a big success, it's like, oh, will they make more? Will they make more? But I think it stands alone. I think it stands on its own. We'll see if Yuasa does more.
It's going to be hard to approximate something like this.
Yeah, right, know? Right. And like, I wouldn't necessarily want them to keep trying to make more and more like it. Like, I wouldn't want there to be 1,000 different takes on End of Evangelion either. You know, and there aren't. Like, it's really hard to make that. So, like, I don't necessarily.
God, they tried.
Yeah, but not that often. Like, they've kind of tried, but, like, it's not something that's like, you're watching something to be legitimately reminded of, oh, this is like End of Evangelion. That's rare. Like, you can say, like, this is playing at it, or this is, like, ripping it off, but, like, actually succeeding at recreating some of those feelings, like, that's really rare. Or, like, making you feel that same way again, that's pretty rare.
So
it's not something you can just kind of churn out on an assembly line, like I said. So I think the wishing for more, saying like, well, what else could they do that's like this? I wouldn't expect anything else to ever be like this. Like, it'll keep mutating, and the next thing will be good for different reasons. You know,
yeah,
it'll be good in a different way for different reasons. So that's my take on it.
I mean, ultimately, I think that Devilman Crybaby is just it's this generation's Utena, right?
Sure.
It's this. So my take on this was, I tweeted about this. I was like, what was the exact thing that I said?
It's like, I'm being cheeky, but they bear a little comparison.
Quite a lot of comparison.
Yeah.
That's not even a joke. I'm going to find my exact phrasing here if you want to just continue.
Well, we've been talking about Eva this whole time, but Utena goes in the same box. It's Utena, Eva, Wolf's Rain, Madoka, Devilman Crybaby as like the canon great anime apocalypses, like emotional apocalypses. Uh-huh. Whether or not Devilman Crybaby hangs is something, like right now it's very, I'm holding it in very high esteem, but there is that asterisk is like, well, but I felt a disconnect in the end.
It's literally, and also it's like, it's literally a week old. We have no distance from it yet.
Well, and it's this horribly dense, difficult thing that we all shotgunned in one sitting. So like, of course our feelings are conflicted, you know? What was that, Jacob? Were you going to...
Just the phenomenon of we all watched it in one crazy weekend, and then we all started talking about it with each other, and there's been an explosion of fan art and jokes and memes. It's pretty great.
Yeah, it's been really great. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun. Jacob, did you have something to add?
Oh, I found it. Okay. So I said, now we have masculine sexual revolution apocalypse anime, Devilman Crybaby, feminine sexual revolution apocalypse anime, Revolutionary Girl Utena, lesbian sexual revolution apocalypse anime, Yuriko Murashi. That just means we need a gay male one and some trans ones, and we've covered the gamut. Like, we have all of it. We're just, like, halfway there. We have three so far.
Okay, well, listen, Mike, thank you so much for stopping by to rip through this show with us.
Pleasure was all mine. I had a great time watching it. I've enjoyed discussing it, and I'm like I said, I'm just jazzed that such a broad cross section of people have discovered and embraced it.
Yeah,
that's totally. Their story, and the minds behind it are some of the top ones.
Absolutely. All right. Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Yes.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Mike for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Play Music, Google Play Music, right? That's a thing. Also, YouTube. Don't forget, like and subscribe. Leave us reviews and stuff. It really helps the show out when you do that.